Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World According to Velvet. This is Velvet reporting live from planet Earth. It is March 17th, 2015. In some circles, this is the day that the American Irish celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And because of my research, I'm having a hard time celebrating St. Patrick's Day today, even though I'm Irish. And so today I am supposed to be talking to Jen and Jacob from Gaia Journey, who are now in the Baja, and they have met an amazing woman by the sounds of it, Kitsia Kokopelamana, and they're staying with her at Buena Fortuna, working on their farm. And she said my Skype icon appeared, so she is going to see if she can call in. So we may actually have this conversation with Jen and Jacob, as I'd hoped. It's been a long time since I've talked to Jen and Jacob, partially because I've been really busy with my schedule. I haven't done a lot of radio shows. I've been kind of working with Robert Fitzgerald, the theoretical astrologer, but I haven't had as much time, which I have time this week. It's kind of quieted down as we head towards this powerful equinox and new moon. And so we are hopefully going to get to talk to them because they are having what sounds like an amazing experience. They've met Kitsia, who is doing some amazing work in not only in Mexico, but from what I understand in Ecuador, as it relates to saving seeds and creating community. And here in Montana, we are hungry for community, and we are creating a community. And what Jen and Jacob are learning down there, they hope to bring back here and use food and seeds and gardening to help us cement a stronger community. I'm not sure what's happening in Skype land. They're going to try to Skype in, and they said my icon appeared, so they're trying to call. So in the meantime, I don't want to speak for Jen, so I won't say too much more about what's happening with them. Sorry, I have my beagle who sticks his head through the cat door, and he wants to be a part of the radio show, but he's just a little too wild. So anyway, so until Jen and Jacob Skype in, I'm going to just talk a little about what I understand is going on energetically. So this is the final Uranus in Aries and Pluto in Capricorn square. Says they're going to, just got an update from Jen, they're going to Skype in a minute. Anyway, so with Uranus in Aries, that was the energy. Oh, they're here. Let me see if I can connect them in. Okay, perfect. Okay, are you there? Can you hear me? Okay, guys.
Can you hear us?
Yay! It worked!
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, so it's going
Yay.
On. Let's see how. So I kind of did a little bit of an introduction talking about that you were in the Baja right now and that you met Kitsia and that you're at Buena Fortuna, but I'm going to have you guys tell us what you've been up to since we talked last. We have 25 minutes left, so go ahead.
Okay, well, tell us if we...
You're kind of cutting out. Can you hear me now? Shoot. They aren't talking, so... Oh, they dropped. The call dropped, so we're going to try... I'm going to keep going with this Uranus in Aries, Pluto in Capricorn square. So, as I understand it, the first square, there's been seven of them, if I remember correctly. Excuse me, I got to go let this dog in. Pluto in Capricorn and Uranus and Aries, they first had their first meeting as a square in what I understand was 2012. And everybody keeps talking about the Uranus and Aries and Pluto and Capricorn squares as being kind of like world changing and almost ushering in the Aquarian age and breaking down old structures, you know. So Uranus moved into Aries almost at the exact time of that earthquake in Indonesia that resulted, I guess it was off the coast of Japan, and that resulted in Fukushima and the Fukushima nuclear meltdown. And I kept saying last week that I felt like the energy was very similar to the week of when that earthquake and tsunami happened. Well, anyway, the Pluto and the square to Pluto, it's happened seven times, and it feels like it every time they're in an exact square, there's growth potential. Well, I've been working on a book right now, and it's tied to King Nail of Ireland. I'm not sure I'm even saying that right, because I've not heard anybody pronounce it. He was the patriarch or the grandfather, father of the O'Neill dynasty. And he, according to the mythology and history, it's more mythology, I think, on some level, he was the last pagan king of Ireland. And he was the last king to go through the what you would call the pagan rites of kingship. So he, in order to become king, he had brothers, and his stepmother wanted her sons to be king. And so she pushed the boy's father to choose the next king because he was sick. And the father went to a druid and asked the druid to come up with tests to prove who would be the best king. And so according to this mythology, to this story, King Nail, who was separated from his mother at birth and raised by druids, was raised in the tradition of the goddess, and he knew about the rites of kingship and knew what was expected of him. So whereas I get the sense that the other brothers were not raised in this tradition and didn't have the same understanding of how things work. So anyway, King Nail, he had to first prove that he would put the needs of his people above the needs of above his own needs. And so the first test was the forge of the village was set on fire, and all of the boys saved something from the forge, and that was the determining factor about who would prove that they would put the needs of the people above. Look, I have a puppy that is wild. He's trying to chew up his bed right now, so excuse me. Talk about Aryan energy. He's got a little bit of too young energy. So anyway, King Nail was the one who pulled the heart of the forge out of the fire, pulled the anvil and the bellows. And if you know anything about blacksmithing, the anvil and the bellows are the heart of the forge. And by saving them, he saved his village, because at the time, in the 4th century, the blacksmith was a very important part of the village. He made farming tools, he made weapons, and without the blacksmith, the village would have a harder time surviving. So that was his first test. And the second test, he had to get the blessing of the divine masculine. He had to kill the stag. And in Celtic lore, the stag is the consort of the goddess, you know, the protector of the goddess, the protector of the land, and the protector of the people, of the women and children. So according to the mythology, he connected to the energy of the divine masculine and was basically led to the stag, unlike his brothers who fumbled around, and he killed the stag and took the food back to the village. Okay, so Jen's back. I might have to finish this story later. Okay, see if I can bring her on. Jen, are you there? Jen, are you there?
I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so I've been telling a story, but I'm putting that story on hold. I'll tell more later. So tell us what you've been up
to. So what we've been up to is we drove down to Baja, and we went to Buena Fortuna, which is a botanical garden, which it was started by Gabriel Howarth and Kitsia Coco Palmana. They've been 3,500 varieties of seeds, which, as our listeners probably know, is because the GMOs and all the other monocropping she said that there's over 600 varieties of lettuces that exist, and people don't know.
Hello, you're cutting out.
Okay. So, she's doing this.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're kind of cutting out. Yeah. So I thought about there were 600 varieties of lettuce.
And so what she's basically doing is she has a seed sanctuary down here, but it's much larger than that. She is really delving into connecting what does it mean to...
Hello? Hello? I can't hear you very well. You're kind of cutting in and out. Dang. Anyway, are you there, Jen? So, anyway, I'm going to just go ahead and continue with my story about the Uranus in Aries, Pluto, Capricorn square. So King Nail goes to the stag, and the stag offers himself, and the King Nail brings the food back to his people, so his people are fed. And in the way that he hunted the stag, he received the blessing of the divine masculine. The third test, and notice in all these mythologies, the tests always seem to be in threes. All right, Jen's back again. So these tests come in threes, and the third test was that he had to go to the sacred well and bring water back for his people. So in mythology, the wells in Ireland are very, very sacred places, and they're places of the goddess. And for him to get water from the well, he had to ask permission from the goddess. So when he and his brothers get to the well, who's guarding the well but an ancient, ugly hag? And she refuses to give the boys water unless they give her a kiss. Well, the other brothers, because they were not schooled in the about the goddess, they don't understand that the goddess can represent herself as the maiden, the mother, or the crone. And they refused to kiss her. But Nail, because of how he was schooled, he kisses the goddess. He not only kisses the hag, but he also makes love to her, according to the mythology. And when he is finished, she has turned into a beautiful maiden called Sovereign, that they call Sovereignty. And it is this aspect of the goddess that bestows the blessing of kingship on whoever is to be king. So when Nail kissed the goddess, to me, the crone, it is very much the potential of this last Uranus in Aries and Pluto in Capricorn square. There's an astrologer. I can't say her name, I'm sorry. But she's a really interesting astrologer who works a lot with the feminine aspects, with the asteroids. And she says that Pluto in Capricorn is very, very much like the crone energy. And so to me, what this last Uranus in Aries, Pluto in Capricorn square is about is the potential for our young, virile, hopeful, masculine energy to kiss the goddess and receive the wisdom, the deep wisdom of the earth. Okay, that is to me my interpretation. And so the other thing that's really interesting is that this, in some parts of the world, this square occurs on St. Patrick's Day. And according to the mythology, after King Nail receives the blessing of the goddess, something happens and he stops living up to his end of the deal. He stops supporting his people, protecting the women and children, and instead he becomes a marauder. Almost they call him a pirate. And he goes to the British Isles into France and kidnaps people and children especially. And so he really isn't protecting children. Instead, he kidnaps children and sells them as slaves to people in Ireland. One of the people that he kidnapped was St. Patrick. Okay, and according to the mythology, when he kidnapped St. Patrick was a 16-year-old. So he wasn't a young child, but he was a young man. And according to what I've read, he wasn't a particularly religious man, but his mistreatment by the Druids and his separation from his family makes him a godly man, especially according to the mythology that he has a dream, and in the dream God tells him to go to the coast and there would be a ship waiting for him. So and God tells him to run away from his slave master and he would find a way back to Britain. And so he does. He steals away in the middle of the night, and when he gets to the coast, there is a ship waiting for him. And so he barters passage on this ship with the ship captain, and according to the legend, the ship captain is also a pagan and a druid, and as part of his to get his passage, he kind of has to become like an indentured servant. So again, he's enslaved on some level. And again, it doesn't give him a very high opinion of the druids or the pagans. So he finally gets back to Britain, and he decides he's going to become a priest. So according to what I've read, he goes to France, he becomes a priest, and then he comes back to Britain, and while he's in Britain, he has a dream that the people of Ireland are crying for him to come and save them. So he goes across the Irish Sea back to Ireland. By the time he gets back there, King Nail has already died, okay, and he's left his people. There's turmoil from his death because, you know, when there's a power vacuum, then people rise up trying to take that power. According to what I understand, it's his nephew, I can't remember, Darius is his name or something like that. His nephew is king, and St. Patrick goes to his nephew and offers his nephew baptism, and he agrees to this. And that from that time on, Ireland is a Christian kingdom. So Nail also goes to... St. Patrick also goes to Nail's sons and offers them baptism. And according to the stories, I'm writing a story about this now, right? So according to my story, there's 12, very much like the whole 12 tribes of Jerusalem, the 12 tribes of, 12 tribes of Israel, sorry. The 12 zodiac, 12 is kind of an important thing. But in this mythology, St. Patrick offers the sons of Nail baptism. Six of them accept, and six say, heck no, I'm going to stay loyal to the goddess. And as a result, St. Patrick curses those six that chose not to. The other thing that I have read is that St. Patrick also curses the hill of Usnich. And when he cursed the hill of Usnich, he did something to the grid lines of Ireland. Okay? When he cursed the hill of Usnich, he shut down it as the umbilical of Ireland, and the, what are they called, the omphalos, the navel. And so I have kind of become obsessed with the navel of places. You know, there is a historical and mythological discussions on the navel in Egypt, where the Benben stone is. The Kogi in Colombia say that they guard the navel. The there's a navel somewhere in Africa too. I don't think it's just Egypt. But anyway, I was reading all about it, and within the last couple of months, I have discovered where the navel of this continent is. That there is a navel, and that energy, much like in St. Patrick's time, that navel was shut down. And how I get the sense that the navels all over the world are places through which humans connect to the goddess. They connect to the telluric energy of the planet. And they're also tied to the ley lines. So if you go on my Facebook page, I just posted a map, about the five cities of light in the United States. Well, I feel like looking at that map, it is some sort of time mechanism. And I don't know if it's like natural time or a time that is connected to what the Mayans call, I can't remember what they called it, but the Mayans talked about how there was a time structure related to the nine levels of evolution and the nine levels of the pyramid that were connected to this pulse of creation that comes from the center of the universe. Well, anyway, I get the sense that the time mechanism that I see that the cities of light created, I get the sense that they connected this continent to that pulse of love that comes from the center of the universe. And when St. Patrick shut down the navel of Ireland, it disconnected those people on that island and maybe the whole British Isles, because at one point the Ireland and Britain and Scotland were still part of the European continent. And so perhaps that belly button is the original belly button of Europe, you know, of the European continent. Not sure. That may come, that information may come, because I think a lot of times, I think these time mechanisms were created a long, long, long time ago, and these grids that the time mechanisms are created from are being updated, they're being brought online. So when I go to Ireland, I knew I needed to go to this navel of Ireland where this stone is. It's called the Cat Stone, and I feel like there's something I need to do while I'm there. And I think it's tied to the curse that St. Patrick put upon the land, and he put upon half of the descendants of King Nail. And that curse, as I understand it, was tied to sovereignty. You know, sovereignty is a really powerful word. Sovereignty is kind of a word to me that symbolizes that I belong to nobody. And I heard the word today called psychic sovereignty. And I'm wondering if the curse that St. Patrick put on half of the descendants of King Nail, it was some sort of, that took away their psychic sovereignty, that enslaved them to the false time matrix that he was a part of putting over the land. Because I'll tell you why I think that he had something to do with these, with this time mechanism. So when I first learned about St. Patrick, I mean, literally, or really learned about him on a different level, I had the swine flu, and I knew that there was something that was being healed. It was amazing. I felt that flu readjusting my meridian system, and I knew there was some, because it settled in my lungs, I knew I had some great grief that I was about to release. And so I did a meditation asking what it was about. Sorry, I just fell out of my chair. And what I saw was I was falling through the air, and I looked up, and there's St. Patrick, and he had just pushed me off this cliff, and I land in the rocks below in the ocean, in the Atlantic Ocean, and my thought is, you know, this isn't what we agreed on. And so then I've done a little more meditating on this story, and what has come up is that I was, the only word that I know of now, and I don't know what the Irish would call it, but that I was a snake priestess of Ireland. I was one of the priestesses that worked specifically with this original timepiece that had lasted on the Irish island up until about, you know, the beginning of the 5th century. And so in my meditations, I learned that I actually met St. Patrick while he was a slave, according to my story. I met him while he was a slave, and we connected, and I taught him what I knew about these grid lines. I know I maybe should have trusted, or not trust, I maybe shouldn't have trusted him because of his anger at the Druids. However, there was some connection that he and I had, and there was also something that I taught him about dream time, and I get the sense that he misused what I taught him, and so I'm partially responsible, you might say, for him doing what he did to the Irish and to that time mechanism that is connected to Ireland. And that's probably why I'm going to Ireland, to clear any karma about not being able to forgive him, or any guilt that I have that I shared that information with him that caused him to misuse that time mechanism to shut it down, because he knew about it, and he knew about it because I think I told him about it. So anyway, I'm really sad that we couldn't have Jen on, but maybe it's all perfect, because I guess maybe I'm supposed to tell this story today. Tell this story today on what is known traditionally as St. Patrick's Day. I feel like I have to understand what the power of this day is, and maybe this day has always had significance as a precursor to the equinox, which is on Friday. And this equinox is going to be especially potent because there's also a solar eclipse, and it's been called a super new moon. So it is a super powerful time to set intention and to create the changes that you want in your world, and to basically dream a new dream for a planet. And so if on some level it had to be done, that St. Patrick had to shut down that time mechanism to allow these other blueprints to be loaded into the matrix, it's now time to restore the original time mechanism. And I am very excited to understand and see how that unfolds. Okay, I guess this is Velvet saying over and out from planet Earth here in Whitefish, where it's trying to snow and rain. And I'd like to also say goodbye to my friend Jacob and Kit. I'm hoping we can figure out these technical issues so that we can get you on the show and hear what you have to share with us. Okay, love to all, light to all, peace to all. Happy whatever day it is.